Big night here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download. Special episode of The Download as we get ready for the third and final presidential debate in Las Vegas, Nevada tonight between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. A must watch? I don't know for Chicagoans or anyone who may live in Los Angeles as well as the Cubs and Dodgers are underway. But a big night for both candidates, especially for Donald Trump, who really needs to have something happen to essentially stem the tide, which is going seems to be going in the other direction. Tonight, we're going to have pre-game. We'll also do some post-game as well. We'll also have some post-game for the actual game, the Dodgers and Cubs, when that game is over. Chris Varonis joins me now. He's a Republican analyst, and he is here. Let's talk, Chris. I'm fascinated by this. I mean, Donald Trump already, we had some updates in ABC News where it was, you know, the spin room, the celebrities were there. They're trotting out all these side sort of characters. Is this what you expect from Donald Trump tonight? I mean, it's all everyone really wanted him to go to issues, but it already sounds like it's becoming circus.
Well, unfortunately, what you expect out of Donald Trump and what you want him to do are two vastly different things with the Gulf of Mexico in between them. Yeah, these stunts are kind of what Trump does, you know, kind of getting Obama's half-brother on there. You know, I think Steve Bannon, his CEO, said this was just an appetizer, so there might be something even bigger out there. But the reality is if the question is what should Trump do, he's got a lot of fodder. There's a lot of stuff out there with this quid pro quo that came out from WikiLeaks,
right?
Exactly. There's the fact that Hillary in the speeches that Bernie Sanders railed on her about during the primary.
The transcripts were leaked as part of WikiLeaks, right?
She talked about open borders, basically.
Do you see, I mean, is that what you see? I mean, if you're advising Donald Trump in this situation, do you have him go after the sort of foibles of Hillary Clinton, or should he stay on message and stick with issues?
He's got to do something extremely difficult, which is maintain his attention span beyond 1 minute. Like 2 minutes would be a blockbuster, but if he could do that and ideally bridge back to this fodder and make the debate about her, where she's pausing or stammering or looking for a comeback, that is what
get
around
the ropes, right?
Exactly.
Well, he's tried. See, it feels like he's tried that the first two. I mean, we saw the second one was a little bit after what happened with the Access Hollywood bus and Billy Bush show. It's very difficult, but it seems like that has been the strategy, but it hasn't necessarily hit.
He might do slightly better now. They say that Chris Christie stood in as Hillary Clinton. And this is something, as you know,
he never
wanted to do the debate prep,
right?
The traditional debate prep. But supposedly, you know, they've been ratcheting up the preparation. We'll see. He's definitely got an impulse control problem. He likes to do the slash and burn, swing for the fences. That hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. Definitely didn't work the first debate. Second debate, he may have won on the points. Really doesn't matter. He's got to make up for a big deficit in the polls against a candidate who's running out the clock, and that's pretty hard.
Yeah, this is a great way to put it, running out the clock. Tonight, the debate starts at 8 o'clock in studio with Chris Varonis. He's a Republican commentator. All right, Dave Lundy will join us after the break here. We'll take a break. We come back, we'll get more on what Hillary Clinton needs to do tonight in Las Vegas. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with special coverage of the debate, the final debate, presidential debate in Las Vegas tonight between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. In studio with me, Chris Varonis. He is a Republican commentator. Also joining us, Dave Lundy, who is a regular here on WGN Radio. He is one part of Touche, also a Democratic analyst. Let's talk about what Hillary Clinton needs to do tonight. Chris already sort of went after what Donald Trump needs to do. What does Hillary have to do tonight?
Get out of the way. Hillary always does best when Donald Trump destroys himself. It's been fascinating the last week to watch because Hillary has largely been invisible and she's ostensibly been doing debate prep. But I think she's trying to not, you know what they say, when your enemy is killing themselves, just stay out of the way. And I think that's what they've been doing a lot of. I expect that she's going to do a little rope-a-dope tonight. I mean, I think that she's going to try to take the high road. She's going to try to present a vision for herself. The polls are all going in her direction, including in places like Texas and Arizona. She's not winning Texas, but so I think Hillary needs to really present herself as the person with the vision to take on the challenges of the future. And now, that said, I'm expecting she's going to take a couple of shots at Donald.
Do
and there's probably going to be some pretty hard shots.
I was
going
to say, but I mean, we kind of talked about what he needs to do to make it about Hillary, and he's tried that the last two debates, and maybe the second one a little bit better than the first, but that hasn't necessarily worked. Does Hillary Clinton do almost what she did with Bernie Sanders, where it became less about who she's debating and more about sort of presenting herself for the job that she wants?
Yeah, but I look, I think I may take a little bit different view than probably her strategists do. They just want her to stay away. You know, it's like when your opponent has won, or when you've won the first 14 rounds, you try to avoid a knockout as your opponent is flailing around. And I would define flailing as doing things like bringing Barack Obama's half brother to the debate. It's a bizarre thing.
It's bizarre.
And it reminds people that he's the birther in chief. That Donald Trump was the birther in chief, and it's that, and he's bringing Sarah Palin in, and I just like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, the Clinton people are notoriously cautious. So this is, as we said earlier, I mean, this is sort of like a four corners offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Keep the ball away from your opponent. She's so skilled in this setting. She's not only debated Bernie Sanders, but Barack Obama too. And this is who she is at her core, a professional campaigner. Although, quite honestly, she is a poor campaigner, and in some polls, her unfavorables are ahead of Donald Trump. That may not matter though, because if really what this comes down to, this is a turnout election. She's got the operation in all the swing states, and who they're speaking to more than any other electoral segment. Is white educated women?
Are we going to see that kind of positioning, that kind of targeting tonight? Both candidates going after who they think they need when you talk about a voting block, as opposed to addressing the country as a whole. Well, we see that a lot when we get deeper into these debates.
You know, Donald Trump needs to present himself as a grown up. He hasn't done that in the first two debates. And there was an interesting poll out today from Quinnipiac. And it's funny how the pollsters, they're trying to identify the depth of his problem. And so they asked the question. They said, does this person have decency? It's like the Joe Welch question from the McCarthy hearings. Have you no sense of decency, sir, at long last? And so the question was, does this person have decency? And the answer for Donald Trump was 59% said no, he has no sense of decency. And only 36% said he did. Hillary, 55% said that, yes, she has sense of decency. 42% said no. Now, in a normal election year, her numbers would be terrible. But we're not in a normal election.
As we move on, we know a certain sector of the population is going to go for Donald Trump. A certain section is going to go for Hillary Clinton. When we talk about anyone who may be undecided at this point or have different agendas in this election, a lot of people on the right side of the aisle are saying anybody but Hillary. And they've been saying it for a year and a half. They don't have any sort of love. No love lost for the Clintons. I mean, are those votes fair game? I mean, are they at play? Can Donald Trump right the ship to go after the voter who not necessarily is into the Trump sort of antics, but really don't want Hillary Clinton in the office?
The slash and burn is not going to be the path forward, although that's what Trump knows. That's most comfortable for him. That he's in his zone when he's doing slash and burn. It's not going to work. The two things that would be the saving prayer for him would be underpolling. People don't want to come out and say they're for Trump. So, and in some of these swing states, the margins are pretty tight. You know, I mean, you could look at different polls, but Hillary should be way ahead in some of these swing states. So that's number one. Number two, what comes out in the next 2.5 weeks? Because if you're Julian Assange, if you're Vladimir Putin or whoever, you're saving the best for the last.
Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the underpolling thing is an overstated phenomenon. And I say that for several reasons. One, They've looked at the question on registrations. And in areas where, that should be Donald Trump heavy, registrations have gone up. In areas that should be Hillary Clinton heavy, they've gone up a lot more. You look at in Florida, for example, the number of increased Republican registrations is 6,000. The number of increased Democratic registrations is 500,000. Now, not all 500,000 of those people are going to vote, but if half of them do, that's a huge block.
Right.
But also, even in terms of, you know, you look at the different kinds of surveys, and the underpolling is a phenomenon that you would associate with a lie. You don't want to tell somebody you're voting for Trump if there's the social stigma attached. But in the automated polls, there's really not much difference between the automated polls and the live polls. And so if this exists, it will be a surprise to every pollster in America.
Let's take it back to the debate tonight. One thing I wonder is, you know, there's been a lot of clamoring about the fact that this has been all about character, less about the issues at play. Will we see any questions from Chris Wallace that might be along the lines of issue-oriented questions that we have not heard from yet? I mean,
even talked about immigration.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Are we going to see that kind of thing? I mean, are we going to – is this going to be a debate that's going to be fresh, or is it going to be retread?
Yeah, it's an odd thing. You know, really quickly, I on C-SPAN, I saw the 1984 presidential debate, Reagan and Mondale. I was floored at how substantive it was. I could not believe it, then compared to now. That might be kind of an oddity if Chris Wallace started talking about the issues. But then again, I don't think Hillary is going to prompt any kind of conversation about the issues. She's just going to let Donald Trump self-immolate.
But I think that if they spend most of the night talking about issues, Hillary will have a phenomenal night, because you got 90 minutes. You need a little depth. Donald Trump has never developed any depth on any issue. So he's usually pretty good for the 30-second version, but not for the 90-second version. So I think if they go there, she'll be delighted and her people will be delighted, because what she has difficulty with is articulating a vision spontaneously. She's just not good at that. And in fact, in the first debate, which she won by 40 plus points in all of the polls, I said on the air, I thought I gave her a 7.5 out of 10. And the reason I did was, sure, relative to Trump, she was fantastic, but she never articulated the vision, and she didn't do it in the second debate.
Well,
and
the
this
wind-up
is her last
key
chance.
Runs out by the time she gets to the issues. I mean, someone, Robbie Mook's got to go back there and wind her back up, Dave.
Yes, there is that.
There is. Dave Lundy, Chris Varonis in studio tonight as we prepare for the debate, which begins at 8 o'clock here on 720 WGN, the third and final presidential debate, which will be in Las Vegas tonight. Let's take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news with Rob Martier, get an update on tonight's game, the Dodgers and the Cubs, game 4.
0-0.
0-0. There is the update. It's a download here, 720 WGN. Stay with us. All right. Rob Martier, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, you ready for tonight? There's a lot to juggle.
Oh, man. Forget the Cubs. I'm diving right into this debate.
I love it. I mean, it's really left and right hand tonight, man.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rob. It's the download, 720 WGN. We are doing pregame tonight, previewing the third and final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, which is happening in Las Vegas tonight at 8 o'clock. We're airing it here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Dave Lundy and Chris Varonis. We're talking about not only the debate, but where we're at with this campaign with only 3 weeks left. Decisions, right? Okay, so let's talk about tonight. Let's stay with the debate for a second. The weaknesses. This is really, I'm interested in what Donald Trump has to do to pound at Hillary Clinton's weaknesses when it comes to the WikiLeaks and all the things that have come out in the last couple of weeks. What does Donald Trump need to articulate to the American people that is really a weakness for the Democratic candidate?
The distaste in Hillary Clinton really has to do with, we can't trust this person. We've known her for 30 years, and everything we see and hear about her, we don't like. He's got the material. It's been handed to him through WikiLeaks. And one thing he could do in particular that they're sort of strategic is depress the base vote, and that is remind Bernie voters, remind them that this is the person who you thought she was Here it is in the Goldman Sachs speeches. She's free trade, open borders.
But you, I mean, he has to articulate that because one of the things about WikiLeaks is it's not articulated well.
And even harder, he's got to do it in short, concise sentences that are not run-ons.
Right.
That's an even bigger hurdle to clear. He's got that. He could play the violence card against her with the firebombing that you saw in, was it North Carolina?
Mm-hmm.
With the...
The Kramer piece, right? Do you think that gets brought up tonight?
Rob Kramer, who's married to Jan Schakowsky.
Yeah. Do you think that that video gets brought up in the debate tonight?
Well, I think we should explain what we're talking about here. So James O'Keefe, the Veritas guy, who has done a lot of gotcha videos, undercover videos, most of which are wildly edited. A lot of his videos have been discredited. The problem is for Hillary, there's large segments of two of her guys saying horrible things, particularly this one guy, Foval, who I don't know. I know Kramer. We all know Kramer.
Right, right.
But do I think he'll bring it up? Sure. Is it the right move? Absolutely not. Donald Trump has not established his threshold, his basic, I'm running for office, I'm a sane person, I can be steady. There are Republicans who are thirsting for it. They're dying for it. And every opportunity he gets, he blows it by getting distracted on the attacks. And what was really interesting, watching all of his surrogates today, I probably saw five of them interviewed on various shows, and every single one of them said, well, I think Mr. Trump will be sticking to the issues tonight. We'll be sticking to the issues tonight. They're sending him a message. It's like what Kellyanne Conway did the other day at a speech when Trump was going off the rails, and she shouted out in the middle of the crowd, stick to the issues. So
let me ask about that. Yeah. Donald Trump, obviously, that's his Achilles heel, getting off message. Does Hillary Clinton see that as a weakness? Does she try to, as we've seen in the press with the president and others, try to goad him into having that sort of that off message moment?
He has been the easiest baitable guy in the world. It reminds me of when I'm taking my kid to a fish pond, and all you got to do is throw a little pellet, and they all rise and rise and rise and go to the pellet. That's Donald Trump. It's funny, the line that Hillary said in the convention speech, a man you can bait with a tweet is not somebody to be trusted with the nuclear codes, has proven to be true beyond our wildest imagination. He just has no discipline whatsoever, and that's his fundamental flaw.
Do you, Dave, and we've talked about this, but is there fear in the WikiLeaks stuff? Do you feel that maybe Donald Trump's not the right candidate to expose it, but do you feel like what you're seeing, what's coming out in the WikiLeaks is something that is concerning for the Democratic Party and for Hillary Clinton?
No, and this has been really interesting because I the first dump – remember Roger Stone, the crazy right-wing gadfly that's Donald Trump's buddy, had said, this is it. On Wednesday, this campaign will be over with what's going to be leaked on WikiLeaks. And they leaked it, and it was like, meh. And then the next day. And they're doing it every single day. And so two things have taken place. One, everybody knows it's the Russians. They're messing with the elections. The Ecuadorians cut off his internet access. So there's some discrediting. Plus, what they've done is they've interspersed phony emails with real emails. So I think they've hurt their own credibility. And two, the stuff that's in there, I mean, if you're a campaign junkie, it's interesting. You probably thought it was interesting.
Yeah.
But the average person,
do you agree?
Too much.
I disagree. There's no bombshell right now. There's no like silver bullet that would allow the Trump people or the Republican Party to stand up and say, see, there it is. That's one thing. But two, these emails just show the classic Hillary Clinton. Before, her husband was, it depends on what your definition of is. Now we have, you have a public position and you have a private position. This is Hillary Clinton to the core. Unfortunately, we don't have a high competency candidate to prosecute the case against her. Unfortunately, I have to admit Dave is right on this. So for Trump, it's to get through this debate. To get through it, there is a dimension to this where if Hillary's got to find a sweet spot, not attack him too much, but not lay off. There's this weird phenomenon with the Trump supporters that the more he's attacked, the more they stand up and support him. So that's a factor too. Hmm. That I don't know if Hillary's going to be pretty like she won't.
And
be
he kind of did that
it.
in the second debate. He kind of stopped the debate to say it was unfair that he wasn't getting
exactly.
His, that's
go
a strategy. That's a strategy to say that riles up his base.
And it's 100% true for 38%, and that's his problem. He has delighted 38%. And in that second debate, oh my God, those 38% were ecstatic. And they're still 38%. So you look at all these different polls that have been done, and there's like a dozen a day. And his number is 38, 39% in every single one. Sometimes hers is 41. Sometimes it's 51. His does not move.
If it's true that Hillary Clinton is planning a transition right now, she's going to inherit this. And she's got to be thinking ahead. She's got to lead. She's got to heal. I really feel for whoever the victor is, there's a huge job ahead of them to mend this divide. And it's I know we say this with every election, but it's nothing quite like we've seen this kind of demographic divide. It's scary.
This is really troubling. I mean, you know, first of all, he does it's a rigged election. And then all of his aides come out and surrogates come out and say, well, it's not really rigged. The media is rigging it. That's what he means this. But then he goes out and he just says, no, this whole election is rigged. No, it's not. Our elections do not operate that way. They're all run by counties, hundreds of counties all over the country, and then 50 states, most of which that are run by Republicans. So the whole thing is nonsense. But by creating that doubt, now when you look at the polls, you find that Trump voters, 75%, say the election could be stolen from him.
Doubt's a powerful
thing.
That's
terrible.
Well, we're seeing doubt playing. I mean, that's a great point. I mean, doubt is really a huge part of this election. And in the debates, I mean, he needs to cast doubt that Hillary Clinton is trustworthy, and she's casting doubt that he's competent for the job. I mean, there seems to be doubt, unfortunately, plays a big role in sort of U.S. politics.
Yeah, no question. I mean, it's but there's different kinds of doubt. And what he's doing now is just creating fundamental distrust in the system. The very fabric of our democracy, as Barack Obama said yesterday, is the peaceful transfer of power. It's what other nations around the world envy about us. Oh, right. And every 4 years that goes fine. And Donald Trump is casting doubt that he will concede the election. It's, you know, if you wind up on election night and he loses by even what, you know, any of these polls say, 10 points, and he doesn't call and he doesn't concede and he goes and gives a speech and it's a nasty speech and Mike Pence calls and concedes, it's just ugly.
Well, then the popular theory that's out there right now is he's setting himself up for a stage right exit, setting the stage for Trump network.
Yeah,
possibly.
Right.
Well, you know, he needs that 38%.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
He needs an audience.
Chris Verones, Dave Lundy in studio. We'll take a break. We come back as we get ready for the 8 o'clock debate. Let's talk about the electoral map and also about the down ballot races and how this is affecting. We're seeing Paul Ryan really amp up the concept of we can't let the Senate turn. And for the first time, Democrats being very hopeful about the opportunities both in the Senate and the House. Dave, Chris, in studio, 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Dave Lundy, Chris Verones in studio. We get ready for the debate, the third and final presidential debate in Las Vegas tonight, moderated by Chris Wallace, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton. We are giving it a couple final minutes here before the debate starts. Let's talk about the electoral map. This is something that I've seen you post about, Dave, and talk about that, you know, Democrats are feeling very confident that even in a worst-case scenario, their candidate has what it takes to win the election.
There are any number of states that if Donald Trump loses that state, he's done. So in the most interesting one, a poll out of Utah today shows the independent, who's not even talked about in most places because he's only on like 20 ballots, Evan McMullen, former national security official, is leading that poll in Utah because the Mormon vote in Utah just cannot stand the immoral nature of Donald Trump and his sexual, you know, peccadilloes. And they don't like Hillary Clinton either. And so here you have a viable third party candidate. If Donald Trump loses Utah, you just say goodnight. Goodnight. Because
I mean, it really is down to there's a lot of different states that he just loses that state. It's over.
Yeah. Right.
It's true.
How do you do that?
She's got probably more than a half dozen different pathways to 270. he has got to the only hope for Donald Trump will be early on election night if he gets Maine or the congressional district in Maine, New Hampshire, North Carolina, and Florida, then the Hillary Clinton are really, really concerned.
But he's got
to pick up those states, all of them.
And even New Hampshire. I mean, the polls today say New Hampshire is 10, 15 points.
15. Yeah, there was a poll out of New Hampshire today, 15
points. So that's going to be difficult for him to
I mean, you know, Steve Schmidt this morning, John McCain's campaign manager, said that he sees this trending towards 400. I disagree with Steve because I can't get her above 396. But I've got her 396. That assumes that she wins Indiana, Missouri, Georgia, Arizona. I don't actually think that's going
to
happen.
It's somewhat unprecedented to have this big of a lead with three weeks left. What do you guys do? You've both been involved in campaigns. What do you do when you're staring this? If you're Donald Trump's campaign right now, knowing that there's very slim chance for you to win, do you concentrate on those states you mentioned?
You yell from the back of the room, "Stay on the issues." I mean, that's one thing that you do. You know, and we've said, you know, for quite some time, Donald Trump's worst enemy is Donald Trump. So I think there's two different questions here. There's what does the Trump campaign do? But then what does the Republican Party do? And then, you know, for me, this is the one saving grace. This is the one thing that I look forward to that's going to make this hangover a short one for me. And that is if down ballot, there's enough separation where we can hold on to the Senate and the House. I mean, the House is pretty much, I think everyone knows that that's going to stay in Republican hands. It's just how bad how tight the margin
is. Have Republicans done a good enough job of separating themselves?
And so in these races that should be where there should be a much wider margin, I'm talking Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Nevada, it's a tight race. And especially Ohio too, where Portman's done the most masterful job. I mean, basically, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee is pulled out of Ohio.
They did about a month ago. It's so bad.
And so that is a really exciting thing and a rare thing too, because that rarely happens when you have a strong candidate running at the top of the ticket, coattails taking everyone. That rarely, really happens. I mean, Howard Metzenbaum was the guy who did it in Ohio in, I think, 1988.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing here, and if Democrats have a massive night, and as you know, I've been predicting 12 points all year, so I still am sticking with my 12 for Hillary at the top of the ticket. And if they have a massive night, and it looks like Democrats could have won the House. If they don't, the reason is actually not gerrymandering. I mean, fundamentally, it's gerrymandering, but it's more than that. The Democratic candidate recruitment effort this year was not good. The difference is that in 2006, when we took the House, the recruitment effort was phenomenal. We recruited top-tier candidates all over the country at a time when it didn't look like they were all going to win. This year, it's kind of hit and miss. So you've got even some of the Senate candidates, like in Nevada, where the Democrats should be beating Joe Heck because Joe Heck is alienating all of his Trump supporters. She's in trouble because she's not a great candidate.
And that's
same in Arizona.
Problem, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's our fault. So there will be coattails. I mean, I think that there will be coattails, but it's going to be selective. I think we're going to win the Senate. I think we're going to win it. There are several seats in play. Probably we'll win it with a couple of seats to spare. The House, I think, is really going to be – it's as unlikely we'll win the House as it is that Donald Trump will win the presidency.
I loved the separation strategy comes down to one line, and that was from John McCain. And I personally don't agree with it, but I love what it represented, which is – give us the Senate and I'll stop all of Hillary's nominees.
And there you go.
Which there it is right
there.
Yeah,
that's what they've been saying.
That was crazy.
Cut Trump loose and then give us the Senate.
We're here for you, right. Yeah. Chris Varonis, Dave Lundy in studio. We'll take a break here and we come back. We will launch the debate, which starts at 8 o'clock here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Just moments away from the final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in Las Vegas tonight. Chris Varonis, Dave Lundy here. Rob Martier as well. We will have live coverage of the debate coming up here at 8 o'clock. All right, last words, guys. Dave, what do you predict tonight? What do you think's going to happen in Las Vegas?
I think a lot of gamblers are going to lose money, and Donald Trump is going to have a similar debate performance to his second. He's going to be attack, 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 attack. All his 38% are going to think it's awesome, and he's going to lose.
Chris?
I think we're going to see a Trump that we haven't seen in the first two debates. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a little bit more focused. I think Hillary will land a couple of good punches on him, good quotes, but in the end it'll be a wash and it won't matter.
All right, there you go. Rob, you hear it here. I mean, they're getting ready. Chris Wallace is on stage as moments away here from the debate in Las Vegas. Exciting night. We'll have it. It's probably going to be 90 minutes. That's usually the give or take 90 minutes, right?
I do agree that a lot of people will lose money in Vegas because, as you guys know, the house always wins.
It always wins.
Unless it's owned by Donald Trump.
Well, those in New Jersey, certainly, that's for sure. Yeah. But yeah, Chris Wallace from Fox News is out on the debate stage right now prepping the audience. There was some pre-debate banter back and forth between the organizers, and they also reminded the audience numerous times, guys, that they would like everyone to try to remain calm if they can, to not cheer loudly if their candidate makes a good point or has a zinger. So they're already telling the kids at the playground to behave themselves tonight.
All right. Well, that's coming up here. It's interesting because it's 8 o'clock right now. Chris Wallace is still, I guess, chastising the audience before it even starts, telling everybody what they need to do before the candidates arrive on stage.
He's saying, shh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Pre-admonishing, yeah.
What is the, Dave, do you know, I mean, this is going to be pretty much a standard debate, right? This is like two of them on a podium, the way it's been
actually,
done.
Actually, this is around a table. The first one was the podiums. The second one was the town hall, and the third one is around the table.
Are you sure?
Just like the vice presidential.
I thought it was two podiums.
Yeah, I think it's two podiums. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. It was supposed to be around a table.
Maybe the table got bounced.
Apparently so.
Subterfuge. Thickens.
crooked Hillary. She killed the table.
They're going around the room right now on CNN, showing the former President Bill Clinton, others who are in attendance. As we get ready for the debate in Las Vegas, which is actually at the university in Las Vegas, not at one of the hotel conferences or conference rooms, but at the UNLV campus in Las Vegas. So interesting. I mean, as we wait, I mean, they're late here. They're a minute late to the stage, but obviously they're going to make up for that, I'm sure. On the
you know why they're late. Because Democrats are always late. It's our fault.
Well,
I'm sure
it's the bathroom.
Yeah. No, they're trying to wake her up from her nap.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Right. Or she's, you know, kind of got a needle in her arm.
Yeah. Of course. All right. So, yeah, they're coming up on stage here. Are they getting ready for the debate? It's a lively crowd. There was a lot from the spin room about everyone who's in the audience. Mark Cuban's there, President Obama's half-brother, and, you know, the campaign saying that there's going to be more surprises tonight.
Sarah Palin
is in the house. You really get this idea that there's going to be a lot of sort of sideshows.
But here's the thing, and this is really the most important thing. The first debate can matter. It can matter significantly in terms of the trajectory of a campaign. Never in the history of presidential politics has the third debate made a meaningful difference.
Why is that? I mean, if people just make up their mind,
yeah,
they're
done? Because the first debate's got 84 million people and the third debate's got 40. I mean, I think people are, at this point, you're getting a lot of people who are confirming their decision or their... you don't have a lot. I don't think there are a lot of undecideds who are sitting there going like, golly, I just don't know anything about these candidates.
And yet there are for some weird reason.
Well, I wonder, you know, obviously in Chicago, Los Angeles markets may have be somewhat distracted, but you'd expect a lower turnout when it comes to television ratings from a third debate.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And plus, frankly, people were disgusted. They've been disgusted watching these debates. This is not America at its finest. You know, look, I'll blame that largely on Trump. But it's
even though Hillary is like 1 or 2 points behind Trump with an unfavorability.
Sorry, my friend, you have old data. No, Hillary's about 10 points ahead of Donald Trump on unfavorability.
But there is something to be said that either candidate...
I'd like to see those numbers.
I'd like to see those numbers.
Well, during the debate, I'll pull them out for you.
But it does look like they're doing podiums. Chris Wallace is now sitting down as they get ready for the candidates to come on stage. to begin tonight's third and final debate, presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. We'll have this. We will also return after the debate with post coverage of the debate analysis to see how each candidate did. Talk about the debate that we just aired here on 720. WGN. Well, they're taking their time, Rob, but I think they're getting ready to go now.
And there you have it, the third and final presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Justin, in the books, a wide range of topics covered, and I think by and large, both candidates were relatively well-behaved.
Yeah, there we go. As you see right there, the third and final presidential debate finished in Las Vegas. We've got Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy in studio tonight. Guys, let's get right to it. I mean, what do we think? What's your takeaway, your quick takeaway? Dave Lundy, why don't you start with you?
That was just a devastating performance for Donald Trump. I mean, he was just so god-awful. There were times tonight when I thought he was impersonating Alec Baldwin impersonating himself. If there was a slaughter rule for presidential debates, they would have called this thing after 45 minutes. I mean, he was incoherent. He was babbling. His punches weren't landing. He was terrible. And she'd made a very interesting strategic decision. She could have played prevent defense, and like she did in the second
debate. We talked about it in the beginning. Yeah.
Exactly. She didn't. She went hard after him. She chose her spots, and she just hit him so hard on abortion, on the women issue, on immigration. I mean, this was a textbook of how one candidate should be and how one candidate shouldn't be.
Chris Roebling, what's your takeaway from the debate?
Well, I predicted on GNTV before the debate that she was going to come after Trump, and indeed she did. But I don't see it as David does. I think this is a case in which they had different assignments, and probably they both achieved what they wanted to achieve. I think what she wanted to do was illustrate, I am ready for more support than I've had so far. I've got a lot of reasonable positions. I don't have the edges that are indicated by the WikiLeaks or by what Trump says about me or any of these other things you're hearing. And I'm acceptable to the broad middle. That's her position. Mm-hmm. His position is not just holding on to his base, but trying to get people, the people who might not vote at all. And this is where his campaign is. Might be completely crazy, might be brilliant. We'll find out after the election. But he is trying to get the people who are on the edge about, should I participate in the election at all, to say, you know what, I am sick of what's been going on. I am going to participate in the election. And the theory of his campaign is that those folks who are not responding to the phone poll people, yes, I'm going to participate.
Where does he find those votes? I mean,
when he lands at 757 in Melbourne, Florida, and there are 25,000 people waiting to see him, and there are 15,000 people lined up outside, that's where he's getting this idea. Now, did you see Nigel Farage was over there in Las Vegas today, actually being interviewed on CNN? So he was the leader of the Brexit campaign. And I believe, again, this could be crazy. It could be brilliant. We'll find out on election day. But he thinks there are groups out there who are going to participate because they're sick of it. And I disagree. I think that David is seeing this a little bit through his partisan lens. I'm looking at both of these people, each one of them having achieved key objectives for themselves.
Yeah, I don't know what debate you watched. When Donald Trump said that he would decide whether to accept the results of the election on the night of the election, depending upon what happens.
Well, that's exactly what Al Gore did. Al Gore did.
Oh, please.
And Al Gore kept it going for 4 or 5
Republican
weeks.
Republican strategists around the
country. One at a time.
Chris,
one at a time.
Republican strategists around the country today condemned him. Congressmen, senators, former presidents. Everybody is condemning what
he is doing
because it's so dangerous.
I'm sorry, David. Who cares about Republican consultants?
Republican
you
women.
Do?
No, Republican women. Republican men. People on the fence. The polls are going to drop for him. This was a horrible night.
We'll find out. You're saying that right now. What I'm telling, hey, there are people banging the window out there. Please step back.
And they're all agreeing with me.
Control yourselves. Yeah. But what I'm telling you is this. It doesn't matter what Republican consultants say. Most of them aren't worth the powder it takes to blow them to hell. What I'm talking about are the folks who are saying to themselves, Somebody has to stand up against what's happening for us. And they don't see that in Hillary. Now, the question is, are they going to see it in Trump?
That's the big question.
I think that is the big question. And look, had Trump run his campaign differently, I think that we would be looking at a different. But even with the current real clear politics average of 39-45 in the four-way race, 45 plus or minus three, it could be down three. 39 plus or minus three, it could be up three.
Oh, dude, you are this so thing, smoking crack tonight.
No, I'm telling
Seriously.
You. I have a background in inferential statistics, and I can prove the central limit theorem for you. Okay?
That's my favorite line of the night so far. And there's been a lot of great lines, but that might have been it right there. I've got a background in, what is it?
Inferential statistics.
Inferential statistics. All right. But I want to get to, and we're going to take a break here in just a second, but I want to get to all the issues.
You're smoking crack about, you want desperately to believe
okay.
everything that you have
every
said.
Every time we
God
have this.
Bless you
every time
it.
We have a debate, I tell you Hillary, in these three debates, I tell you Hillary has won, I tell you about the percentage, and every single time yeah. I have been right. You are misreading
there are three, horribly. There are already, despite everything that you have said, based on your theory, Trump should be somewhere around 36-35%. Okay?
No, he should be about 38%, which is what he is in every single poll.
And even today, there are three polls that show them either even or with Trump ahead by one. Now, that doesn't mean that he's ahead by one. I'm just saying, if you look closely at what's going on, there's a lot of dynamism out there in the voting pool, and that dynamism is being influenced by what they see.
We have a lot to cover here, and let's stick to the debate, what happened tonight in the debate, talk about performances. We will get to what we see happening in the next three weeks as we get closer. The one thing to take away, I thought that Chris Wallace got quickly into the debate with issues that have not been talked about.
It was great. He was great.
He was good. The Supreme Court stuff at the top, we got into abortion, immigration, a lot of issues that sort of been glossed over so far in these debates.
Oh, I thought that was terrific.
It shows what preparation will do for you. I mean, and I think it shows also he saw the original, what was the thing on the aircraft carrier in New York with whoever that was?
Oh, the National Security.
So he saw the Matt Lauer, right. And then he saw the first two debates. And I think that Wallace has the benefit of that additional time in which to prepare. I also think he's a more commanding presence, and I think that it is better to have one moderator and not two, because it automatically diminishes the significance of either one of them in the case of Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper. So he's a very solid news person, and I thought that he did a great job. And we should all thank him for that, because he did get them to focus for whatever 11 minutes on the Supreme Court. So you heard from her, and you heard from Trump,
and we'll break down those issues and get to specifics that happened. But overall, the tenor and the tone of this debate, you saw at the end sort of a call to an inclusive end to this. So you saw Hillary Clinton talk about, okay, I'm for Democrats, Republicans, and independents. You saw Donald Trump say in Donald Trump speak, you know, Latinos, African-Americans, you're going to have a better country with me than the Latinos and the
African-Americans.
So, but the concept
it's
being
subtle,
that...
It's subtle, but people pick up on that.
Yeah, but the concept being that it really was... Did you feel at all this idea that even though we're seeing so much about rigged elections and what's going to happen, transition, peaceful transition of power, that there was at least a stretch on both sides of the aisle to talk to people that weren't their base?
Well, I think that Hillary Clinton definitely tried to do that. She recognizes where some of the undecided voters still are. There are people who are not comfortable with her, and they may never get there. But I will tell you, look, Donald Trump's biggest weakness, and this is where I disagree fundamentally with Chris, his biggest weakness is on his temperament. Polls continue to show it. As I said earlier when Chris was on television and I was just on the radio, the Quinnipiac poll said today that 60% of the people said Donald Trump has no sense of decency. He did not help those matters tonight in that debate. Every time he interrupted her, every time he would do the Alec Baldwin impersonating Donald Trump going, wrong, he looked like a jerk. I mean, he looked like somebody who does not have the discipline and self-control that you want in a president. And that's why I disagree with you so strongly. It's not even some of the lines and some of the topics. I just think his demeanor was off and got worse.
Yeah, I think there was actually a marked improvement. Once again, because I was driving over, I heard the first 25 minutes in the car, and then I saw this stuff. But when you listen to the first 10, 20 minutes, which I heard in the car, and then I got up here, I missed about 5 minutes. But his answers were far more organized. They were concise. compared to, I'm not saying.
Oh, you mean compared to him previously?
Compared to his first okay. two debates.
Okay. Previous Trump.
And I believe that that's, I think that that is a significant improvement. I mean, he was in terrible shape at the first debate. I think he was in better shape at the second. I think this was unquestionably his strongest debate. And I think that he had something to say, and he had a lot of factual recall.
Well, we're going to go to that. We'll get into that factual recall coming up here after the break with Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. We are breaking down the debate, which was the final presidential debate in Las Vegas tonight between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Good news in Los Angeles as the Chicago Cubs are opening up an 8-2 lead on the Los Angeles Dodgers in that game. I believe it's in the sixth inning. Not bad.
Splamma!
That would be Rizzo's second hit of the night. One home run and one single.
The illustrious Rich Riley has texted to the family, if the Cubs, I want to go on the record as stating, if the Cubs lose, I may or may not accept that result. I will let you know what happens.
Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy in studio tonight. We're breaking down the third and final presidential debate, which just happened in Las Vegas.
I think it's brilliant of him to say I might not accept the result. And I think that the Democrats are squealing. You see David Axelrod squealing, and David has been squealing right here. After they put the country through a pointless and divisive post-election 8 or 9 weeks. David was enjoying every moment of it. When Al Gore and whoever the no-name was running with him, nobody can even remember. Who ran
with
him?
That was Joe Lieberman.
Okay, I love Joe Lieberman. He was a great guy. Joe Lieberman is a truly
great
American.
That's what I do. The no-name that you love.
Yeah, who couldn't remember? You know, Al Gore, we all turned off the TV set whenever he came on. But they put the entire country through that, and then they denied the legitimacy of Bush, and everything that's been going on in this Obama era is based on what the Democrats did when they cried and whined and held their breath.
Absolutely, Chris. But I would also say there was a question of the result being razor thin. If you're in a situation here where Hillary Clinton wins by 12, 15 points. And
that's going to be something different. But, I mean, he's not going to.
That's what we're talking about here.
No. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about, that is not at all what we're talking about. Why are we wearing our headphones?
I don't know.
What we're talking about is the following. Trump is evoking a sense of alienation. And the sense of alienation may or may not run deep. This is my point. It may be brilliant. It may be crazy. Mm-hmm. If it is brilliant, then that the alienation to which he speaks will propel him into the White House.
But the alienation, political alienation, is not new to this country. You see in many results, 52-48, a much closer sort of divide when you talk about Republicans and Democrats and what happens after the election. I mean, that's part of elections, the idea that someone is going to lose. The way that Donald Trump is stoking the flames and talking about that they're being wronged, that's what we're trying to get at.
Yeah, he's not evoking alienation. He's provoking alienation. And this is why, you know, Chris can poo-poo Republican elected officials, Republican consultants, Republicans, Americans in general, every editorial board in the entire country. But the fact is what Donald Trump is doing right now is fundamentally at odds with our entire history in this United States of accepting the results of the election. I didn't interrupt your filibuster. With all due respect, my friend, you can take on Al Gore for having contested the fact that there was a 500 vote difference out of 3 million cast. But when the Supreme Court made that decision and his advisors were encouraging him to contest it further, he said, no, we need to put this behind us. And he got behind George W. Bush, and Democrats got behind George W. Bush after 9/11. So do not begin to tell me that Al Gore was fundamentally contesting whether one party was going to win or lose. That's ahistoric.
No, Al Gore was denying the facts on the ground, and he had his trial lawyer allies down there rewriting.
Why are we relitigating 2000?
He was rewriting Florida election code on the fly to try to win,
right,
contrary to the will of the people. That is what Al Gore was trying to do.
All right.
And he tried and he tried. And there were four legitimate recounts. Each one of them came out the same. He ignored the first, the second, the third, and the fourth. He only accepted reality after the Supreme Court forced it down his global warming throat.
All right, let's talk about tonight.
You are responsible for Al Gore.
Yeah, if Al Gore listened to people like me, he never would have conceded the night of the election, and we might have won. But that's a different story.
Let's get into some of the issues. I find it interesting that Donald Trump definitely takes on the role of the outsider, talking about some of the issues that are important to a percentage of Americans. But when he gets on stage and he talks about some of these issues, let's talk about abortion for a moment. You know, pro-life, pro-choice. He likes to go to the absolutes. You know, he stayed on a topic when he talked about it in very explicit language about ripping babies out at 9 months.
I'm glad he did.
That's what
the pro-choicers have to be confronted with.
Why?
Because they are trying to put that completely behind the curtain.
No, they are. There's no pro-choice person who's like, geez, I want to cover up the fact that this, that is such an extreme situation, Chris.
Hillary
and
Clinton.
It feels like it's very political. It feels very much like
political.
The insider.
We're in the middle of a campaign.
No, but I'm talking about the insider stuff that Donald Trump is rallying against. That's what I'm talking about. He waffles. He goes into, I'm an outsider. And then he goes, you know what? I'm going to start doing the same political tropes where we pull out the very sort of extreme levels of an issue that we're talking about.
The rhetoric was extreme. And I have to tell you, talk about things that helped him lose this election. If there were women who were unsure, like, oh, I don't know if I could vote for Hillary Clinton, a hell of a lot of them tonight heard that answer, heard the graphic, disgusting rhetoric that he was using and said, you know what? No, you know what? I can't handle this. I'm voting for Hillary. This was a disaster of epic proportions.
And I want to tell you, David is referring to maybe three women in the entire country.
Oh my God.
You are saying that there were women out there who didn't know that Hillary was pro-choice and that Trump was pro-life?
No,
that
it's the rhetoric. It's
no,
the
but I mean, there wasn't the whole point here is, you know what the point of this is, and this goes to the rhetoric, and maybe this is part of your point, although I don't think your point is really very important. But I will grant it to you, okay?
Not the first time that's been said.
But here's
why. That's okay.
There, you know, the pro-life people have been betrayed for years and years. One of the great myths, one of the great lies of the Democratic Party is that if you elect a Republican president, then Roe versus Wade will be overturned. They said it about Reagan. Then they said it about George Bush. Then they said it about George W. Bush. Then they said it about McCain. Then they said it about Mitt Romney. And now they're saying it about... Well,
it is not a myth.
Of course, it's a myth because
if Ruth Bader Ginsburg retires and you appoint two more justices, you would have five pro-life justices who would agree to overturn Roe. It is not a myth. It is a fact.
It is not a fact. You can't have a future event be a fact, my friend. And what we are talking about here is a chimera that the Democrats have used consistently since January of 1972, and it has never worked out. We've had three or four of the justices of the seven who voted for Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton were appointed by who? Richard Milhouse Nixon. Okay. And we have had Republican majorities on the court almost uninterrupted since then, and Roe versus Wade has never been overturned. Okay, so these guys are trying like crazy to scare people. They're trying like crazy to tell people that if you do this, then you're going to get that. And the entire historic record is different.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, we got to take a break for the news, and we'll come back. We'll continue. We will be on until the Cubs game is over when post game playoff push, True Blue playoff push, takes over here on 720 WGN. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, 720 WGN. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The download special tonight, post-game for the third and final debate. The Chicago Cubs-Dodgers post-game will be a little bit later tonight when the game ends. Right now, the Cubs handling the Dodgers in a big win.
Is it 10-2 right now?
It's 10-2. I shouldn't say win. I mean, they're only in the sixth inning.
But the key of tonight was Addison Russell and Rizzo both got home runs. Their bats both came alive, desperately needed.
desperately.
Yeah, we were in a drought, and we finally reached the oasis.
Exactly.
So we'll have all that with Carm, Adam Hogue, Kevin Powell, all the guys here at WGN's radio will be a part of the playoff push. True Blue playoff push coming
up.
Cub experts are going to shoo us out.
They're going to shoo us out of the...
Let's do what we do best, and let's talk about politics. Oh. Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling. All right, so let's get to some of the big issues. We talked a little bit about the abortion issue, but immigration was another one that really sort of centered around the concept that came out of the WikiLeaks, where Hillary Clinton sort of talked about open borders. He seized on that, used it in an immigration way instead of an economy way or a trade way. He used it to say, you want open borders, that's terrible for us, it's terrible for everything.
Yeah, so what was really interesting about that was Hillary could have gone a couple different ways on that answer. She rebutted it. She said, oh, it's in the economic context, and I was talking about energy, and she gave a little answer about energy. And she then pivoted and whacked him on Putin and WikiLeaks and said, what we're talking about is interfering with the U.S. elections and it's the Russians. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she baited him. Oh, my God. How many times did she bait him tonight? And he rose every time, including this time. She baited him on the question of WikiLeaks and on the question of Russia. And she baited him to finally acknowledge. And Chris Wallace tried to get him to acknowledge that 17 different agencies of the U.S. government says it's the Russians. And Trump still wouldn't say it was the Russians. And when it came time to talk about Aleppo and Syria, and Wallace pointed out and Hillary pointed out that the Russians are actually bombing Aleppo on behalf of the Syrian government, he would not condemn Russia. I mean, it's really weird. What is it with him and Russia?
Chris, do you find it weird? I mean, we'll get back to immigration. Do you find it weird about his sort of stance on Russia and the fact that he's not like most American politicians – I guess in a way, sort of seeing them as not necessarily an ally, but a rival.
Well, I thought a missed opportunity for him when Russia came up was appropriately informing the public about the Clinton Foundation, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton nexus related to Nuclear One, and the way in which Hillary, after massive contributions and pledges of more contributions, which have actually been made, fast-tracked State Department approval for the sale of a nuclear mining-related concern to Russian interests that are controlled ultimately by Putin.
And 12 other agencies of the federal government also approved that, by the way.
Yeah, well, she's the ranking cabinet member, and as we saw with the XL
that
pipeline.
Was a missed opportunity for him to do that. It sounds like it'd be a little clunky for him to bring up.
No. I mean, this is a case in which you have Hillary Clinton working in cahoots with Vladimir Putin to put Russia in control of a very significant source of uranium ore. So nuclear related.
And you could make an argument that he was making a strong case that the Russians and Putin have no respect for Hillary Clinton and walk all over her when she was Secretary of State.
And look, my view of this was that she has the problem on immigration of trying to take, she has taken a position which is politically correct. And the political correctness that governs her decision is we have to be open to this immigration. And one of the things I really noticed, and maybe it's because I was in the car, but she uses words incorrectly. Okay. So she's referring to these people as immigrants. All right. And they're not immigrants in the sense that Trump was using the term immigrant because he made it. And I think, honestly, and if you have to be, David, if you're going to be honest, I think you got to be honest about this. For the first time in the campaign, I heard him somewhat eloquently describe the folks who play by the rules. They're in Guatemala. They go to the consulate. They go to the embassy. They sign up. They wait. They wait. They wait. They pay their money. They take their test. They do what they have to do. And then finally, they get a visa. And Hillary's plan, which is the Democrat voter roll inflation plan, is that she's going to take the Guatemalans who are here and give them, we know from Podesta, Podesta said falsely in his emails that if they have a driver's license, they should be allowed to vote.
Okay, beyond the political ramification or the idea of bloating tax rolls,
voter rolls.
I'm interested, too, because once again, I felt, Donald Trump went to the extreme on this issue. The first thing he led with was talked about the people in the audience who were affected by
the mothers of the folks who had been murdered.
People
have
been murdered by illegal immigrants. I get that, but again, it feels like that's that extreme sort of edge when you're talking about those kind of issues that have nothing to do with the idea of what we should do with our borders.
But even within that answer, he gave like four other answers. And that's his fundamental problem. And I don't want to get into a disabilities issue, but he's got some serious ADD going on. I mean, the guy cannot focus to save his life. So he starts giving an answer, and he starts giving an effective answer on immigration. And then suddenly he's talking about Hillary and emails. And then he's talking about this. And then he's talking about that. And all night long, he just couldn't seem to keep it together to prosecute a message. And this is what's happened the entire campaign. And this is why people like Kellyanne Conway yell at him at rallies to stay on the issues, because he's talking about four different issues.
But I want to get back to the idea of the extreme rhetoric.
You know,
stuff.
You're pointing out the bold strokes, okay, which I believe are actually necessary when you're in a forensic situation, so that folks know I'm on this side of the line, you know, David is on that side of the line. So that's why you use the bold stroke in the abortion example, in the immigration.
And, yeah, right.
But I do want to say this about his sentence, his response construction. David and I both do, I think we both have done, I don't know how much we do it right now, but we do speaker training. And we talk about constructing answers, okay? And there is a way to get an answer constructed so that you're conveying not only your mastery of the subject, but also your credibility, the fact that folks who are listening or watching can believe what you're saying. Okay. One of the things that I thought he did tonight, I mentioned earlier, fact recall. He got in the point that Barack Obama has himself deported millions of people.
Yes, absolutely.
And
after Hillary Clinton said she would not do that.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And he then tagged it back over to Hillary and said, she doesn't want to tell you that. Now, I don't know if she wants or doesn't want. I don't know. But I mean, that's rhetoric, right? But the fact was, Obama has done this. And then he characterizes it with respect to her. You got to say that was a lot more effective than he had been in debate number two.
The only problem I have with that is that it almost contradicts what he just said. He said, oh, my God. You know, and then she comes and says, deport. He comes back and says, well, you already deport. And you're like, wait, where do you stand? I'm confused. Let's see what's going on with the Cubs game.
This is actually my point, which is it creates total cognitive dissonance for the listener, because he's been telling everybody for months and months and months, for over a year, that we have open borders.
The last 10 minutes of the debate, right.
The Mexicans are pouring over the borders into the United States. And then the next thing he's telling is that Barack Obama deported millions of people. It's like, well, first of all, he's right about the latter point. Barack Obama has deported lots of people and was called the deporter in chief by immigration activists. So then what you said in the first place was wrong. So those two things can't both be true at the same time.
That's the problem.
That is not an example of Aristotle's law of non-contradiction, which I think David was just trying to shoehorn that into. He fails. Sorry, as a philosophy TA, I got to say no to that one.
All right.
But
I will say this real quick.
Both are true. I mean, Obama did deport a lot of people. What Obama wouldn't do was offend the lobby more than was politically acceptable. And what the entire Trump experience, all the way up to and including I may not accept the results of the election, is I'm offending everybody's sacred cow.
Right.
Yeah, seriously. It is now a practiced strategy. It's not a tactic. This is a strategy. And when you have Nigel Lafarge in Las Vegas being interviewed on CNN, folks, that's what Trump is obviously thinking.
38%.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roblin, let's take a quick break. We'll come back here on 720 WGN and continue our conversation around the final debate of the presidential campaign. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. You can hear them regularly here on The Download on Touche, our weekly political segment. It's usually Monday. We'll pick it back up on Tuesdays coming up here just to get us ready for election night. You know, Tuesday night, which is coming up here. Keep it here at 720 WGN. Whoa. Nobody does 2016 like 720. Dave Lundy, no big deal. I pulled that one out from the primary. All right. We're talking about the debate which happened tonight in Las Vegas. We're waiting for sort of the polls, the exit polls that come in. CNN, obviously, the one that everyone pays attention to. They keep that graphic up for an hour that says minutes away, minutes away. But in here, we're a little bit, you know, obviously, we're a little bit mixed on what happened tonight in Las Vegas. But let's talk about some of the other big ticket items. The one was about the fitness of the office. Mm-hmm. This was a very interesting point where it was really about sexual assault, the charges that not charges, but the I guess the accusations that have been hurled at Donald mm-hmm. Trump since the Billy Bush tape of only, you know, 12 days ago or 13 days ago. But, you know, and then also asking Hillary Clinton about her husband, which she never got to, which was something that, you know, I thought was, oh, this is going to be a great question. And it seemed like Donald Trump kind of went out of his way to answer the question for himself and then he deflected. He did something, and we never got back to Hillary.
He dug a hole. And
wait a minute.
What?
Hold on. He responded. He gave his side of that story, and he made a pretty bold explanation. He said, look, it never happened. It never happened. And I'm telling you, it was entirely false,
right?
And it's fiction. You want to talk about something? And he said, but you ask yourself, why did it happen? And then he came up with two explanations. He said, either these people want to have their minute of fame or their 15 minutes of
fame,
or it came from the Clinton campaign. And when you look at the videos that are out right now, this was a fairly well composed. This was not digging a hole. He actually scored points against her because he took these O'Keefe videos, which are not over edited. Everybody should go to the web, watch them for themselves. Maybe you will say, as David inevitably and my friend Marge Halpern says, they're edited. None of that ever happened. Okay. Or you're going to say, like Roebling says, you know what? When you're looking at some people that we know talk for several minutes at a time and it's a continuous quote, that's not over edited.
Okay. No, I understand.
People are going to decide.
Yeah.
But Trump answered. He gave an explanation. Yep. And then he pivoted and he stuck it to Hillary. And Wallace then says, okay, Hillary, blah, blah, blah. And then she turns it into Putin hour.
So that's one interpretation.
that's the name of this segment. So that's one interpretation.
So here's the thing. You know, Donald Trump has always said for over a year, and obviously before that, that he may not be the best puncher, but he's the best counterpuncher. Well, tonight he was not the best counterpuncher. Tonight Hillary, because when he walked right into that counterpunch of hers, and he was reeling. He didn't know what to say. I mean, he couldn't give an answer on the Putin thing.
I would say even on the accusations of sexual misconduct, you know, she went to a bigger thing about belittling women.
She made a tremendous statement. I thought for Hillary and her campaign, she made a tremendous statement. She said, you know what? We now know that this is Trump. She kind of said, we've reached a conclusion, which just, by the way, was kind of literary given the length of her campaign and her pursuing this. She was sort of invoking the point, we've been on a national sort of pilgrimage together, folks. And one of the questions we had when we set out all those many months ago was, who is this Trump? Well, now we know. And we know that Trump disrespects this. So that's her interpretation.
Right.
And I thought she said that pretty well. But
I agree.
Okay, but I don't think
I think Chris is right. I'm not sure that necessarily.
And everybody in the entire world knows that she skated on the payoff part of that she wouldn't respond to the real part of that about Bill and about her complicity in attacking women by Bill.
To her credit, by just laying back and being patient, that there was never any push by the moderator or by Donald Trump for her to actually answer that question. So she kind of she
exactly
skated.
Yes.
Skated.
No. You're right.
Skated.
But here's the thing. This gets back to
Apollo Yoko Ono. Hillary. Hillary Ono Yoko Apollo.
All right.
38%. This gets back to the question that we raised at the beginning, which is, what did each of these candidates need to do tonight? And when I look at this debate, I'm looking at, as I said earlier, the issues around Commander-in-Chief and the issues around decency, but also it's about the women. The gender gap just continues to grow and grow and grow. And tonight,
wait a minute, David,
Christopher,
I mean, I don't. When are Democrats going to alight onto North Michigan Avenue? Like, for instance, right here. Okay, let me just introduce you.
But this is she just has as good. This a is Trumpian. Bigger.
She has a bigger gender gap. To her detriment among men.
No, she does she, not.
Than he has with women to her. So she's leading with women. He is leading with men.
Okay? No, okay? No, no, Chris. Chris, you're wrong.
She has a
20-plus point gender. No, you're focusing on white women and white men. Among all women, she has more than a 20-point gender gap among women, and he has about a 5 to 7 point gender gap among men. It's not comparable, and she's expanding that gender gap among women, and it is what is driving this election. It's what's driving these double-digit poll numbers.
Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling, in studio, we are breaking down the debate that was the final presidential debate in Las Vegas tonight between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news as well as the Cubs game. Rob Martier coming up here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. The download with you till 11 o'clock. After that, True Blue playoff push begins here as we have a postgame for the Cubs, who right now in the top of the eighth inning are threatening once again as they are beating the Dodgers in L.A.
And most important, Anthony Rizzo just got his third hit of the night. One home run and two singles. So he's
like
three for five.
A nice rainstorm after a long drought, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah. There you
Hallelujah.
Go. We'll see how that plays out for them moving forward. We'll have all of the postgame here at 720 WGN coming up.
So wait, they come back,
o'clock.
What, 2-2?
Well, no, they have one more game tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah.
And these guys are going to have a great conversation tonight. The big question strategy-wise is what the Dodgers do if Clayton Kershaw takes the mound tomorrow on short rest to try and get a lead going into Wrigley Field, or if they save him for the series and the weekend in Chicago. So it's interesting.
Well, I'm just looking forward to game six.
Yeah. Why?
I'm looking forward to the fourth debate. Oh, wait a minute. There is no fourth
That's
debate.
That's a great postgame, right? The fourth debate.
CNN says that Hillary won.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. CNN says Hillary won, but not by the 35 points you were promising, Dave.
I was wrong. I admit it. This is the first time
but
tonight.
No, take it,
I was
man.
Wrong.
It's a win.
But no, Hillary won by 13 points in the CNN poll, won by 11 in the YouGov poll. This is now every single debate. She has won bigly. In the scientific polls, Trump needed to have a knockout tonight. He didn't get it. He barely laid a glove on her.
Let me ask you, Chris. I mean, obviously the takeaway, what we're already seeing from the scroll, whether from the yeah. cable news yeah. shows, is Trump says he will not how do you even say it? You say he will not.
He's not accepting.
He won't accept the results of the election.
He'll tell us if he'll accept the results of the election when he sees it.
That seems to be the takeaway, even though I think that's a little bit of a stretch.
I'm going to tell you, I understand what David is saying, and I'm not disputing the polls or their validity or what have you, but I think that Trump and his team and the Republicans and Reince Priebus and down-ballot Republicans, the guy running for sheriff in Calhoun County or wherever it is, they're saying, great job. They're saying, stanch the flow. They're saying, you know what? That was a good performance. Now, I don't disagree. I don't think there was a knockout, but I think that he took it to her, and I think he looked presidential. And I think for a lot of folks, that was a very solid performance.
What's
by
your
Trump.
Takeaway? What's your sub headline? If the headline is Trump won't accept the election until election night, what should be the headlines in the papers tomorrow?
Trump gains no ground. I mean, I think that. Look, after the first debate or going to the first debate, he was up or she was up by like a point in the average. Second debate, she was up by about 3.5 points. Third debate, she's up by 7+ points. You've got 2.5 weeks left. Time is his enemy. And one of the significant things about him not accepting the results of the election is that is going to dominate the conversation for at least the next 2-3 days. That's dominating the conversation. And he's out of time.
He seems to get derailed quickly by these things because, you know, the issues, you'd like to see a little bit more of a positive storyline. Now, Chris, you say this may be a positive storyline in the way that it might rally a base. It might, I mean, one way or the other. I mean, brilliant or stupid.
Before the debate, I was saying to folks that I thought that he had to concentrate on two, maximum three issues, and just take every answer and bring them back to those issues and drive home. Hillary's going to grow government. She's going to grow taxes, going to grow regulation, all this kind of energy. She's going to stymie the economy. Okay, so the economy, Obamacare, the economy taxes, something like that. Okay, he didn't do that. He decided to go with this. And, you know, I said it's either going to be brilliant or it's going to be crazy. I do think we saw that he is in the firm grip of a belief that there is a Brigadoon out there that kind of comes out of the mist on November 8th and is going to vote for Trump, and it's going to overcome Hillary's very
conventional campaign.
Let me
ask you, Dave. I mean, are you concerned about that? The scenario that Chris is talking about, and much like what happened in the UK with Brexit. I mean, do you think that's something that could
movements?
Be sort of bubbling beneath the surface?
On a 1 to 10 scale, I would declare my level of concern at a 1. I mean, seriously, there's no there. Unlike Brexit, this debate, this election is polled by so many pollsters in so many parts of the country, so many different ways. I mean, literally every day there's probably 30, 40, 50 polls that come out, state polls, national polls, by different pollsters using different methodologies, and not a single solitary one of these pollsters is finding this hidden Trump vote. They didn't show up in registration numbers. They're not showing up in the poll numbers, and they're not going to show up on election day.
They're not necessarily showing up yet either in early voting, and that's a little bit of a if you're running on the Brigadoon theory, you would kind of say, okay, well, a little bit of Brigadoon's going to get here early before the morning mist, and then mm-hmm. you see the rest mm-hmm. of it. I do want to point out that there's another whole, in my opinion, dimension to this thing, and that is Trump has somewhere along the line gotten the idea that he is, pardon the use of the term, the Tribune of this forgotten group of people. And this isn't exactly the silent majority. This is a slightly different group than the mm-hmm. silent majority, because it's a lot more non-political. The silent majority was political to the extent that they didn't like what was going on under the Nixon theory. They didn't like what was going right. on, but they were quiet about it. Trump believes that he is connecting to people who are just alienated. We've used that term before, but totally cut off from the system, from the political system. And that's a hard group on which to build a campaign.
Let's talk about missed opportunities, some things we missed, and also talk about what we can expect going forward. We'll take a quick break here. Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy in studio. We're talking about tonight's final debate for the presidential for the race for the White House in 2016 that was in Las Vegas tonight. It's 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Download with you till 11 o'clock when True Blue Playoff Push takes over the post game for the playoff game, the NLCS game out in Los Angeles, as the Cubs have a 10-2 lead in the bottom of the eighth inning. A big, big possible win for. We'll see. It is
four outs away.
You never know,
looking
man.
Good.
You never know. Four outs away. But we'll be coming up here at 11 o'clock, and Patty Vasquez will take over at midnight tonight. All right, Dave Lundy, Chris Roebling in studio. We're wrapping up the post game on the presidential debate tonight in Las Vegas. CNN and other polls have said Hillary Clinton takes the debate. But let's talk about missed opportunities, because it seemed with all the sort of bouncing around and things that were mentioned, even the retreads, there were some issues that were left on the sort of cutting room floor. Mm-hmm. One of which was interesting, was a guest that Donald Trump had invited to the debate, and he never really got around to the issue.
No, it's interesting. So so Pat, what's her last name, Chris? Pat, the mother of the soldier who was security officer
soldier.
Who was killed in Benghazi. So she gave that powerful speech at the Republican convention. It was very intense. She personally blamed Hillary Clinton for the death of her son. It was a very powerful moment. And when that happened, Donald Trump stepped all over her message by calling into CNN, and they broke away from the coverage of her speech, and they covered Donald Trump instead, not on CNN, on Fox. So the key audience, they took her away. Tonight, he invited her to the debate. And so you're thinking, hey, we're going to talk about Benghazi and Hillary's mistakes and her judgment errors and how she got the Chris Stevens and the soldiers killed. And nothing.
Never happened.
Not a peep. I was like, what, did you forget about it?
Chris, what do you think? I mean, do you think that's a missed opportunity? Do you think that, or do you think that they've sort of hammered that over the head as sort of bad judgment with Hillary Clinton?
I'm sure it was on his list of things to do. And, you know, you get up there, you're standing in front of 50 million people and, you know, you think things go in a certain direction and, you know, it didn't pan out. So, but I think that even if you accept this Trump Brigadoon theory I was talking about before, I think that you have to say that his I said earlier, he left on the table, in my opinion, I don't think he effectively rebutted the criticisms of his economic plan that were leveled by Hillary, invoking some left-wing Democrat activist liberal economists.
Moody's.
And so she,
Standard and Poor's.
She looked at that and she was misrepresenting his plan, and he should have come back and defended his plan. Now, David points out he did defend. I agree, but I think that that was a missed opportunity. And that gets to the bigger question. The bigger missed opportunity was what we refer to, not necessarily in public, as a colligatory concept. You have to have something under which everything fits, right? There is some compass heading for the campaign, whatever the heck it is. If it's dog catcher in DeKalb County or president of the United States, there's got to be a compass heading. And his theoretically is the economy. But that means you're mentioning it beginning, middle, and end. And I don't know that the economy was woven into his answers such that people come away saying, he's the one under whom I will have more economic opportunity and advantages. I think it was a little less.
All right, let's talk about what we can expect from the last 3 weeks. We'll be on the air, so we'll be able to do this, you know, every Tuesday for Touche, the political segment we do. But what can we expect coming out of this? I mean, what do the candidates do now that the face-to-face, the debates are over? What do they do? I mean, they go back to their rallying cries. They go back to their rallies, their 757 airport rallies and things of that nature.
I think Hillary goes to an undisclosed location, and she just lets everybody beat up on Donald Trump over will he accept the results of the election. I'm kidding, of course. I think that I don't know where Trump goes from here. I mean, I genuinely don't. And Chris, maybe you've got an idea about this. I think Hillary just keeps doing what she's been doing. She has a few rallies. They continue to reveal new and better ads, and they've been doing a great job with that. They continue to dominate on the ground. My expectation at this point now, less than 3 weeks out, the 12 points I've been predicting, I'm pretty confident is actually going to happen. This is a double digit election. This is not going to be close.
Hillary is going to seek some Republican states. Hillary is going to seek expanding her base. She's going to be seeking a mandate. She will seek a mandate because she doesn't know what's going to happen with the Senate and the House. So she's going to want to get in with as many states as she possibly can. And you're going to see her in states where she wouldn't normally be. Trump, on the other hand, has got to be getting back to the base states that he needs to get to 270. And it remains, you know, he has a very narrow path to victory. So we know that Trump is going to be in Ohio and Florida. He'll be in Iowa and Wisconsin. You know, he'll be in Pennsylvania a bit and New Hampshire. He's got to get one of those other, like Nevada and New Hampshire. I mean, a lot of different permutations. But we know where Trump is going to be. And we know that Hillary is going to be actually not in those states. Hillary is going to be in some traditional Republican states seeking to pull some states over to her side, like North Carolina prominently, but others.
Arizona.
Right. And so I agree. She'll have a stately campaign now. Except she's going to really try to expand that base. Trump, let's not ignore there are exogenous events such as the WikiLeaks, such as disclosure, such as some sort of international thing. If Russia's really in this thing for Trump, I don't believe that in the way that the Democrats say it. But if Russia is desperately concerned about intervening in this thing, who knows? They could provoke some crisis. We've got the sole Russian aircraft carriers in the Eastern Mediterranean. Who knows if there's some sort of incident? We've had these flyby situations, et cetera.
Yeah.
So you've got that kind of thing that is out there. I think that Trump is going to try like crazy to find his Brigadoon. And we could be sitting here, I doubt it, but we could be here and saying, oh my gosh, no one else understood it the way he did. But
and,
I don't think
and by doing that, I mean, does he have to do, when we say he's looking for his Brigadoon, does that mean that he has to almost kind of, instead of sort of staying on message, go off message, continue to do this kind of thing where he brings up all these things that, that get big headlines in the New York Times, get big headlines in the Washington Post? Does he continue to do the things that have been sort of shooting himself in the foot by trying to get this Brigadoon out?
It is never too late to get on message. Okay, fine. It'll be too late on November 9th. But you know, he's got 2 weeks and 5 days. It is not too late to get on message. He can try. It may help stem some of the bleeding. Interestingly, another number out of the CNN poll, Clinton, who's seemed better prepared for the presidency? Clinton 59, Trump 35. Again, I just don't think he helped himself on that key question.
I could not agree more. I think this campaign will be seen, especially if he loses, as it's anticipated that he will. This will be seen, among other things, as the definitive case of not preparing and what the result was. And here is why. On the afternoon of the first debate, UP or AP, I forget which one, announced that they had that the results in the key states were such that Trump was ahead in the electoral vote count by 1 point. He was at 271. So at that moment, it's like the high water mark in Gettysburg, where you go up to the stone wall and you see how close the Confederacy got to breaking through the Union line. And they say this was the high water mark of the Confederacy. 1 hour before the first debate, he was ahead.
Right.
And he wasn't prepared. He didn't know what he was doing. He acted like an idiot. He offended people. And he left a lot of people wondering where he stood. And now he as David has pointed out, he went down from that at the second debate, and now he's down farther at the third.
Well, by the way, one last key point of the night. Addison Russell has also gone 3-for-5 tonight. So he and Rizzo both went 3-for-5. They both have ended their dearth of hits.
We'll have the True Blue playoff push coming up here at 11 o'clock. Dave Lundy, Chris Roland, can't thank you guys enough for sticking around and breaking down tonight's presidential debate. Always a pleasure to have you. We will take a break here. We'll come back and we will bring you playoff push, True Blue playoff push here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. There you go, a little harmonica to celebrate early, though. There's still half an inning to go here.
Let's just celebrate.
Let's just celebrate. Game four looks like it's going to the Chicago Cubs. 10-2 going into the bottom of the ninth. It's time for Mark Carmen, Andy Mazur, and Adam Hoge, as well as Kevin Powell out in Los Angeles for True Blue Playoff Plus, brought to you by Wintrust, Home of Cubs Checking, and by Sloan Water Connects Us. Mark, you got to be feeling good right now.
I mean, this is a big night for the Chicago National League Ball Club. The Cubs with a huge night. Anthony Rizzo, 3-for-5. Addison Russell, 3-for-5. Dexter Fowler, 2-for-5.
Ah, finally.
I mean, just an awakening. The only thing that really went wrong tonight in my mind was Joe Maddon taking out John Lackey earlier than he should. But, hey, all's well that ends well.
I'm sure.
Mazur, of course, is backing Joe Maddon.
Even with a 10-2 lead, he's still second-guessing the man. It's unbelievable.
It wasn't a second guess.
You were watching John Lackey, right?
Let it be.
Yeah, he walked two guys. You were up 5-0.
He couldn't throw a pitch anywhere near
the plate. Couldn't throw a strike. It was a 3-2 count when he went on the second walk.
See what we have to deal with all night?
I love it. I love it. I can't wait. 312-981-7200.
Even in a win, we fight.
I love it that you guys. This is going to be a good one. I'm going to be listening because I want to know what the strategy is moving to game five. Obviously, a lot of talk about Clayton Kershaw and what you do with that arm and whether or not you bring him back on 2 days rest just to get a lead. I mean, the idea now, the best part about the story tonight is that the series has to come back to Wrigley Field on Saturday for game six. That's a huge, huge plus for the Chicago Cubs.
Yes, I thought we were going to be talking about death, but now we're talking about World Series.
First of all, can we talk about how MIA you were tonight?
What do you mean?
Not that it was a bad thing.
Didn't see you the whole game. Didn't even know you were here. Come down here. You're sitting in the studio.
You're all here.
It was my niece's 10th birthday. I thought it'd be a very good strategy for me to have a pizza party at my place with my niece, yep, which would allow me to.
Thanks for the invite.
Family get together. I needed to be around somebody where I would act professional, and that's what happened. And now she is not allowed to go home to her parents for the rest of the playoffs.
Superstition. All right. The True Blue Playoff Plus coming up here right after the news.